pretty early on, you were given the tag Guitar Hero. Has there been any guitar players in the last 10, 15 years that has really impressed you, that's, you know, made you sweat a little bit?
Well, I remember actually, you know, most recently, you know, especially in the in the blues world, you know, look, to me, I think when Hendrix was out, you probably thought nobody was ever going to look sort of do what he did better than he did. And then came Stevie Ray Vaughan, you know, and I thought that Stevie Ray was just, you know, I think every once in a while you see guitar players that they don't just play guitar. When you actually watch them, they're just existing. It's almost like they're not playing the instrument. The instrument is an extension of their whole being, you know. And when you used to watch Stevie Ray play, that used to be really almost scary that way, but really inspiring. That you used to just see him, and he used to be really at one with everything, and effortlessly just, you know, just playing that thing like it didn't, like the guitar was just a part of his arm, you know. And it was pretty amazing. And I remember being at this at the NAMM show, and I remember there was a Guitar Player magazine had some sort of jam, and I was just watching. I was just a spectator. I was invited by my friend Steve Lukather there, and he played a little bit. Everybody went up and played 10 or 15 minutes. Steve I played. I think George Lynch, a handful of people played. And after all these sort of real players were kind of done with what they were doing, what we expected, up came this guy that was doing, first he started playing, you were thinking, oh, great, another Stevie Ray guy that's going to do those traditional blues licks, and he's going to sing. But this, everybody just stopped that. I just stopped and my jaw dropped, and it was this guy named Joe Bonamassa, I believe. And I remember just stopping, and then people were talking to me, and I was yelling at them, just shut up, I got to listen to this. That just made me just stop everything. And I just couldn't stop listening. I couldn't stop watching him. I was so intrigued. And I thought he had some real connection and passion and doing something different than what those guys did with that sort of music. And I remember after he finished running like a groupie into that the dressing room, which was packed with all the other legends, you know. And I remember looking at Steve I from across the room and pointing, because he couldn't hear me, but pointing, just almost speaking as if we were sort of both somewhat deaf and using sign language, and pointing to Joe Bonamassa and then kind of giving that circular thing around my ear like he's insane. And Steve I did the same thing. He goes, he's out of his mind. And it was amazing that all the guitar players in there just really dug him. And that's when you know there's something special. So from a guitar player standpoint, I haven't had that experience a lot lately, but that was one of them, you know.
Now, going back to Queen for a second, who obviously are huge influences on you, can you describe the feeling when the surviving members of Queen embraced Extreme and actually invited you guys to take part in the Freddie Mercury tribute concert? What did that feel like to you?
You know, that still to this day is probably one of the greatest days of my life. You know, for many reasons, but particularly because of the fact that, I mean, just to be a part of that and doing the Queen medley that we did and having the band come up to us afterwards and, you know, Bowie that was there and all these people that we just really admired and complimenting us on what we did, and the fact that we got asked to pay tribute to Freddie, which is, you know, we knew every, you know, inch of every lyric and you know, and we knew all the obscure stuff. You know, a lot of people, there's a lot of people out there today that are taking credit for being, you know, if I see the Foo Fighters one more time at one more tribute induction, I'm gonna kill myself. I mean, it's like the Queen one, you know, they're up with Queen, they're doing stuff, you know, with them, and I kind of talked to, you know, the little that I talk to these days of Brian May, I give him a hard time because, you know, because Extreme wasn't around, we didn't partake in a lot of the most recent sort of celebrations of Queen, and to be asked to do that thing that day was just, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. It was so spiritual and so uplifting, and we thought we were already nervous enough going up and doing that and being included in that, but Brian May did this intro. I think we watched it recently because it was, somebody was playing the DVD at their house or something like that, a friend of mine, and the intro alone that Brian May said about Extreme nearly gave us all heart attacks, you know, saying something like, you know, this band, this next band is a real Queen fans. They really know what, you know, what Queen was all about. It might be the only band on the planet that knew that. He said something like that, that killed us and inspired us. And we went up and we did, you know, what we hope was a great tribute to them, you know.
Going back to the record, the new record, Comfortably Dumb. Lyrically, what are you guys trying to say on that track?
I think that track is basically, you know, it's not something new to talk about, but it's definitely, it's kind of like sitting in front of your DirecTV and, I don't know, 800 channels, I think is what it is. And it used to be bad, you know, 10 years ago, but now it's almost to the point of you know, our sensitivity or our desensitivity to television and world events and bombings and invasions and genocides and things like that, you know, with the makings of reality TV almost, you know, with watching American Idol even, and that's a great reflection of what the music industry has become, to the point where people don't realize that becoming an idol or becoming an artist is not winning a contest. It's not going up and singing a bunch of covers throughout and getting voted because you might be cute or you have a great personality or you actually might be a decent singer. It's not, it has so much more to do with the creativity and has so much to do with the path that you choose to get there and the pain that it takes to get there, unfortunately. You know, the whole discovery of yourself and growing as an artist and everything is not, you know, winning almost like a karaoke contest, so to speak. And that reflects the music business, but also the other shows, all the other things that are going on that have become almost like, I don't know, we've just become comfortably dumb. You know, we sit in front of our TVs or in front of the internet. The internet has a lot to do with that. You know, television has great positive things about it, but, you know, that's probably 20% of it. And it's the same thing with the internet. I mean, the stuff that you can learn online and access quickly, and whether it's, you know, web doctors and things like that, and the information you can get for studies and YouTube, discovering all these other artists or footage that a lot of newer generation would never see again, or even us we have never seen of our heroes. So there's a lot of great things, but at the same time, you know, you can go online and see a lot of ugly things and a lot of craziness, and we've lost communication with all our email skills. We know there's more breakups and fights through email and texting now than, you know, because of just the fact that it doesn't show tone, that it doesn't show your feelings on there. You know, you just, people get so misunderstood. And so all those things, you know, technology and everything that's happening is kind of, that's what it's about. It's just becoming desensitized and just becoming comfortably dumb, you know.
Musically, one of the songs that surprised me was Take Us Alive, which is a kind of a rockabilly shuffle, something pretty new for you guys. Where did that come from?
Well, it's kind of new for us, and it isn't kind of new for us. You know, we laugh at it and we think about, well, if this was 13, you know, years, you know, between records, it's probably, we call it our bionic wholehearted. You know what I mean? It's like we've always had a tinge of that sort of, you know, rock kind of, you know, hoedown feel. From a lot of it, we, you know, even didn't come from straight up from rockabilly, but maybe from some of the rock bands we grew up on, like even Zeppelin. You know, Zeppelin 3 was a big influence on me because it was like, to me, it was a great rock and roll acoustic record. You know, the majority was acoustic for Zepp, and, you know, a lot of that stuff wholehearted, I think, you know, kind of subliminally, you know, a lot of those influences came from that. And even the bands that we just talked about, like Queen and stuff, they did that stuff once in a while, you know? And so I wouldn't call us, you know, connoisseurs of any rockabilly, wow, it's a great one, rockabilly or, you know, country or bluegrass, you know, definitely not trying to fool anybody. It's just a fun moment in time that we were jamming at rehearsal, and that's what we came up with, you know.
Let me ask you about your original Washburn Nuno guitar. Did you remove the finish on the guitar more for a visual aesthetic, or were there acoustic benefits that you liked?
Well, it's interesting because I before it became the Washburn N4, I had built one from scratch myself. And initially, you know, I always had an unfinished neck and an unfinished body because, you know, I bought the parts that way because I couldn't afford to buy a guitar, an expensive guitar that was painted. You know, and I remember buying that stuff, and then it just kind of became, like, that's what I played. And then when I probably got to a point where I could afford paint, a paint job, I realized I didn't like it because I got so used to that warmth and got so used to the unfinished sound that kind of, it's very brown, if you will, color-wise. You know, it doesn't have much of an edge at times. It's a more of a warmer attack. And that became, you know, out of sort of poverty, that became the sound, you know.
How would you say your playing has evolved over the years? Maybe since the last Extreme record, how have you changed?
I don't think, you know, when I was doing the projects in between the last Extreme record and this one, it there was a lot of different vibes because I was singing, and you always take a different approach when you're the guitar player and you're the singer, so there was a different approach. I mean, within Extreme, you always, when I become just a guitar player, even though I do background vocals and everything, you definitely focus more on the guitar. It becomes more of your job and your responsibility more than the singing and everything else. You focus on it a lot more. I would hope that there was one consistency that I've always tried to do, and that's, you know, serve the song. And if it's a beautiful track, you know, I mean, even more than words, didn't have a solo for a purpose, you know, for a reason. It just needed. It might have a little flutter at the end, kind of for a you know, a nice little ending. But when we had a song that was a crazy fun song, like Play With Me, a punk song, then we would do a crazy solo. I'd always try to match the atmosphere of the song and serve the song, and try not to overplay it unless the song needed to be overplayed, you know, and needed to have that craziness. So I always, you sort of continue that. But I think in you know, you always think and hope that you're getting a bit older without getting old, so to speak, and getting kind of boring, you know, and laying down your arms. You try to at least keep some of that going and some of that flair. You know, if it's the Take Us Alive, like you just mentioned, and it's the rockabilly, I hope I did my best to pay homage to that and contain it, you know, within the guitar playing.